I don't know. Are they working? Are they out running errands? Are they working some in the morning and taking a break in the middle of the day like I often do to get myself together and then go to the office later in the day? And being able to monitor that without feeling like you're being suddenly overly intrusive when you used to be so freewheeling about things is one of the big challenges.
Welcome to Work Wise, the growth mindset for wisdom at work. I'm Ken Kennard, coach and chief creative officer at Accent Interactive, and joining me is Michael Boyes from Credo Consulting. Today we talk to Barbara Giamona about managing remote workers.
Hey, Ken. We're back.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm a little puzzled, though.
What?
Well, when I walked into your office, I was expecting to see, like, clients.
Oh, we have clients. We're working for all kinds of people.
Well, where are they? They're not watching you work?
No.
They don't look over your shoulder?
They never watch us work.
Well, how can they trust your work?
Well, we show them the work when it's ready. And they trust us to get the job done.
Oh, and so that's how it works with you.
Well, yeah.
Well, the reason I was curious is because I think this is kind of relevant or relevant to one of the big trends going on in workplaces and society today. And that is a lot of bosses don't really have their people in their line of sight anymore.
They're working from home or in another office.
Or teleworkers.
Yeah.
You know, about 25%. Of the people in America right now, telework to some degree with some frequency. And that places a new burden or challenge on leaders is how do I lead and manage these folks when I can't see them?
So you're suggesting that why can't they trust people if they trust people like me, if they trust consultants and business partners to get the job done without oversight, why can't they trust an employee? And so, you would think they'd know the employee even better.
You would. Yeah, maybe that's why. But it brings up this issue that we treat people differently and in ways that don't make sense. It's one of the, telework, we have this big challenge of the biggest challenge I see as I talk to leaders and employees around this issue is that the managers or supervisors struggle with this idea because they think somehow I can't trust you. Are you really working and will you be productive or will you be home eating bonbons and watching TV?
So is that true? Will the mice play when the cat's away? I mean, it seems like we've got that statement for a reason.
Right. Well, we have it out there in society, but we got it here because Barbara Giamona said that because she is one of those people who is managing a large team of virtual workers. And we talked to her about the challenges of that. In fact, you talked to her about that and she had lots of great things to say.
The in-the-office culture is very different today than it was 10 years ago.
How is it different?
It's more flexible and there is less presence overall, even of people who primarily make the office their workspace. They might work from home on Friday sometimes, but they're in the office, you know, 9 out of 10 days. And yet the culture is very much, how fast can I get in and out of here every day? So therefore people don't take a lunch break and they don't get up and walk around the office and just idly. I remember my early working days, we used to come in on Monday morning. There was a period in my life where we'd all go down to Joe's office every Monday morning at 8 o'clock and catch up on everybody's weekend. So there'd be like 6 or 7 of us hanging out in Joe's office, drinking coffee and talking about what we did over the weekend and chit-chatting and gossiping. And then we'd, you know, somewhere around 9, we'd all like to wander to our desks and start our day gradually. And it was like there was an opportunity to sit and just shoot the breeze with people. And people do not do that in the 21st century, in my observation anymore. There's no breeze shooting. There's work.
What's that about, do you think? What changed?
What changed is the number of women in the workforce, the culture of childbearing and parenting in the 21st century that requires that your children have a higher priority than anything in your own life mostly. So you've got to get that work done and get out of the office as fast as you can because your kid's got soccer practice tonight and your wife has a thing, so you have to be the one who gets them there, or your husband has a thing, so you have to be the one who gets them there. And people are in a real hurry to get in and out of the office. And then the downturn of the last few years in the economy, now we picked up again But in that downturn, there's, you know, razor cuts in staffing, and so everyone has two people's jobs, so you've got a lot more on your plate than you did 20 or 30 years ago. I feel like the workplace is more intense that way and less enjoyable for almost everybody. I think that camaraderie at work is dropping off.
So the first thing you said was more women in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And I think of women, in my experience, women as a rule tend to be a little bit more chatty, a little bit more, let's come together and share about what's going on in our life. Not all of them, of course, yeah. but with more women in the workforce, why wouldn't it be the opposite? Why does more women lead to less chatty?
How about more moms in the workplace? So more moms who are under that stress to make sure that they're out by 5 o'clock so they can take care of the cooking or the errands or the whatever they're doing as moms as well as workers. And more dads have those kind of responsibilities now too. There's more single parents who have all of that weight. There's more shared parenting of larger, I think families are large again, you know, it's like people are having 2 and 3 and 4 kids when it seems like, how can you possibly balance all that? So I think it's the working mom's situation, you know, and I do think the women were more chatty always. I'm chatty when there's people around. I talk to myself when there's not.
Now that is a woman who I just want to hang out with.
You want to be in the Monday morning coffee clash,
well,
don't you, Mike?
I do. I think that this is one of several very astute observations she has.
That I
saw kind of, you know, through fuzzy lenses.
Yeah.
But she's clear on it. You know, she's pointing to a sociologic shift in our world.
Yeah.
Where work, in many ways, is being treated as less personal.
It makes me sad to hear that. Like, she's longing for the days when work was like a community, and now it's just a collection of tasks that you do with a bunch of people that just do them.
But you want to get in and out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah, it's like drive-through work or something.
Yeah, and it's given me new insight, because what I see in workplaces continuously is the effects of the lack of personhood and personal relations in workplaces. And this kind of explains part of that puzzle.
It's so, making me upset, Mike. What is happening to work? Work is too important to destroy it like this.
Right. Well, I think we've gone overboard. We've redefined the family and parenting and our kids as a priority. And certainly you and I both make those things very high priorities. They're very important in our lives. But I think we've made kids and families an idol sometimes. And we've overdone it. The pendulum has swung up maybe a notch or two too far.
Well, but also work seems to be an idol, because it's so important to get the dollar. It's so important to work up the company. It's like squeezing every ounce of opportunity. It's an aggressive place. It's not a lazy. They're not skipping out on the coffee thing because they're lazy.
Right.
They're getting to work to prove themselves and, you know, get ahead. But
if you hear Barbara's take on it, is they're trying to get things done, get in
and out
of there as quickly as possible so they can get home to the kids, the sports, the, you know, making the kids the idol. And so here's the thing. God created us to be parents and heads of households.
Mm-hmm.
And he created us to work.
Yeah.
He gave us both those commands in Genesis.
Right.
Both are extremely important.
Right.
I think we're pointing to a pendulum shift here.
Yeah.
That's taken us one way in the wrong direction, and possibly in reaction to where it was before. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well,
but it's interesting observation.
That's why you have helicopter parents then, right?
Yes.
Because they're there on the tarmac when you're home from school to take you to your next thing.
Because you are the most important thing in the world.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's hard to judge a good value. It's just too far, right?
All right.
So very astute observation about that. But I thought, also, you know, the women thing was interesting.
Yeah.
Because their mothers here.
Right. When she shifted from women in the workplace to mothers, it took on a whole new character, I thought, in her comments.
Because they still carry the burdens more burdens of parenting than fathers do, even though men are picking up, you know, picking up the responsibilities and sharing roles.
So who wants to be a working mom these days? It seems like the worst job in the world. You've got two jobs in one.
Right.
How can you not crack under that kind of pressure?
I think that explains why so many women are torn and in conflict.
Yeah.
And struggling. So, yeah. So, but very astute observations.
Oh.
So here we are. So this is tough. This is a tough thing to do as a working parent. There's got to be some advantages to this.
Well, why are we even doing it in the first place? That was my question for her.
Yeah.
And she had some observations about that too.
Okay, cool.
Let's listen.
Let's hear it.
I'm wondering about the advantages of remote working. So an obvious advantage is that you have access to anyone in the world to be on your team, right? That you don't have to be physically have physical proximity to be a team member. What other advantages have you experienced by opening yourself up to remote working?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about that first advantage because not only am I able to recruit anybody I want, but I'm able to retain anybody I want. So when my person who lives in Boston comes to me and says, I'm relocating to Seattle, I can keep that person with their knowledge and their experience on the team. And she's set up with a complete remote working setup, and it's hardly noticeable that she's not in Boston. Same thing happened to another employee who was in California, and she was moving to Houston. Now it happens I have another employee in Houston, and we have offices there. But I was able to retain her, and she works out of her home because she lives something like 35 miles from the Houston office, so she doesn't want to commute there. And I was able to hire, I put a post on Facebook saying I need to hire for my Boston office, and within half an hour I had an inquiry from somebody who lives in the greater Boston area but 45 miles from my office there. So I was able to hire her. So yes, that's a very important point of this. The other point has to do with again, retention of people who might otherwise not be able to keep this job because their life circumstances change. For example, I have a woman who has three kids, and as those kids have aged, when they were little, they all went to the same daycare. And then when they were in elementary school, they all went to the same elementary school and then to the same daycare afterwards. But when we started to get to junior high and high school, suddenly there needed to be transportation of kids at certain hours of the day and pickups, and they don't go to daycare anymore, but the high school kid who doesn't drive yet needs to be picked up right when school gets out and all that. I'm able to offer a job to somebody who's very capable but needs an hour break at 2:30 in the afternoon to go pick up her kids from school and bring them home. And then she can, you know, shut her office door and go back to work. But I couldn't do that if I required her to be in the office all the time. And that would create stress for her as an employee. How do I get my kids, you know, transported? It allows people to have flexibility around all kinds of personal needs. But then you have to also be vigilant about what kind of personal needs can people attend to and still get their work done, right? So if I have a newborn baby, I can't provide childcare while I'm a remote worker. Not, right? I can't do that. Right. I need to have someone caring for the baby if I'm working full time. Doesn't mean I couldn't do the job from the house, but maybe the baby's not being cared for in the house, you know? So it's a little tricky when you get into those situations. And those were some of the, in the early days of remote working, some of the things we worried a lot about. Is my employee going to give me a full day's work, or are they going to be distracted by things at home that would keep them from being able to get a full day's work done?
So there we see a great solution, I think, for the working mom, right?
Yeah.
If she can work remotely, maybe she can have her cake and eat it too.
Right.
She can keep a good job. She can contribute. She's got skills, but she's got that flexibility for either transportation or some kind of needs that the family might have. And maybe that's why the women are able to pull it off.
Yeah. And this, you know, in so many ways, I see us going back in time.
Mm.
Women have always worked.
Yeah.
And they've always taken care of kids.
Right.
Right. In the old days, before the Industrial Revolution.
You mean the old days before the old days?
But yeah, the old days before the old days. We're not talking the 19th century. We're talking, you know, going back to 17th century and before.
Yeah.
Right. 18th century included, probably. They were working, raising kids. And doing things to raise money and take care of the industry their family was in, or the business they were in. We changed that.
Yeah.
And now we're going back to it.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing shift that we're seeing. So it's kind of neat. But it also has great benefits for the employers too. So, they get to keep talent.
Find talent from anywhere in the world. Keep that talent no matter what the life circumstances change. This seems to be a huge win,
right?
Especially when you consider the cost of letting that person go and having to retrain, reacquire new talent.
Yeah. And this very thing happened to a good friend of mine. His wife is a doctor. She was a very talented doctor and was recruited to go to the Cleveland Clinic. And she worked at Hopkins and was moving over there. Her husband also worked at Hopkins as an IT guy. And he was so good that Hopkins didn't want to lose him.
Yeah.
So he's been telecommuting from Cleveland for 5-6 years now, maybe more. Still working at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore.
And it works for both of them, right?
Yeah.
Works for Hopkins, works for the family.
From his office. And he's the one who does primary care for the kids a lot of time. They share that, but he's the one who's home.
So now you have dads working from home that are sharing the burden of the child care, right?
Yep.
To a larger extent.
Yep.
That's going to be a shift.
Yep. So Charles is in charge. That's his name, Charles, and he is in charge.
Charles in charge. So certainly it's not all sweetness and light. It seems to me there's got to be some challenges associated with this transition from working in the office to working remotely.
Yeah, well, it's not all peaches and cream because, Charles does live in Cleveland, where it's all darkness and clouds.
It's raining always.
It's always raining there. I live there. I know. It's not all that bad. But it's not always peaches and cream. And I think that Barbara experienced a lot of those things, her share of those things, and shared some of the difficulties and how she overcame them, and gave us some more astute observations that I'd love to share with our audience.
But the biggest challenge at first was the seemingly unending workday. Because India is 12 and a half hours ahead of Southern California for most of the year. So in order to talk to people who work in India, I either need to be on the phone at, say, 10 o'clock at night, my time, which is 10:30 in the morning for them, or 6:30 or 7 in the morning, my time, with the expectation that they're going to work a later shift and be in the office at 7 or 8 o'clock their time in the evening. And at first, I was accepting a lot of invitations to these late night meetings and discovering that I was not very effective at 10 o'clock at night. But the Indian people are kind of used to working a shifted day, and they do stay up late at night, so they often work till 7 or 8 in the evening. And it was easier to shift it so that I got up early in the morning in my time zone and converse with people kind of end of day in their time zone.
So here Barbara's talking about the difficulty in connecting with people who were working remotely. And she specifically has this challenge of people working across time zones, across the world.
How do you even meet with someone that's halfway around the world?
As you heard, it's very difficult. And she found some good solutions for that. But I think this speaks to one of the challenges I see in the workplace now, with people teleworking, having alternative work schedules and all these things. And people, I see teams deteriorating because they somehow have confused the privilege of being able to do this with the right to do it and not putting mission first. So the rule is you adjust your calendar to meet with the team to accomplish mission. These things bend around that.
Yeah.
And I see people get confused about that. And that's one of those strong leadership things. We talked earlier about this idea that telework reveals issues.
Yeah.
This is one of those issues it reveals if you can't meet.
Well, when I've managed a remote worker, and the few times I have, I always feel nervous as a leader, because if they're not working when I'm working, then how can I lead them? There's just that back and forth that's now become a sort of like delayed, I send them a message, I get the message back tomorrow.
Yeah.
It sort of breaks the flow of work, and it makes me wonder if my leadership is really strong.
Right. Well, I think there's some kind of fallacies there as well, that I think really is a problem in leadership. And so one of the mistakes I see leaders make is assuming that their employees are always ready to work with them on whatever's on the leader's agenda.
Yeah.
The reality is that the employees, you know, whatever level they are, they have things on their agenda as well. And so figuring out communication routines and collaboration routines that work for both people is essential no matter what.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just amplified.
Yeah.
In these virtual settings.
Yeah. Let's listen to a few more of these challenges. Yeah, then.
That certainly wasn't the only one, was it?
No, she's got a whole list. So let's go to the next one about trust.
Okay.
One of the biggest challenges is developing trust in the people in the far points to know that they're actually working when you're not watching them work. I'm a very self-motivated person, and you don't need to tell me that I have work to do. But I was a new manager in a new company, and I didn't know the skill sets of the people that I was inheriting. So initially, especially, I was really concerned about, was I getting a full day's work out of people who knew the boss was not there, you know, like cats away, so the mice will be playing. Over time, I came to realize that for the most part, these people were working way more than the requisite 40 hours a week because they were also interacting with people in India and people in other parts of the United States or North America. So it created a situation where people were working a lot and their presence was known to me. And we had tools that would tell you if they were available. An ongoing challenge with this situation is as you establish this trust and these personal relationships with people, are people taking advantage of you? So because I manage people who work in the East Coast and then India, my day starts early. I often don't make it to the office till the middle of the day if I do go to the office myself. My local office is only 15 minutes from my house. But I don't need to be there because most of the people I work with aren't actually there, and my boss isn't always there either. So I can work from home. And so can people who work for me. This is a, you know, white collar information worker kind of function. You can do it anywhere that you have the internet and a computer and a little peace and quiet. I don't know. Are they working? Are they out running errands? Are they working some in the morning and taking a break in the middle of the day like I often do to get myself together and then go to the office later in the day? And being able to monitor that without feeling like you're being suddenly overly intrusive when you used to be so freewheeling about things is one of the big challenges. I try to have regular one-on-one meetings with my people, but those are times I use not to check up on their work, but to check up on them. Because the thing that keeps you from not putting your head down and working is the rest of your life, not your work. And I've had a series of problems in people's lives over the years. I've been managing this team, 3 different people with breast cancer, somebody going through a messy divorce, another person going through some financial difficulties because of a spouse losing a job. You get these combined kind of situations of personal life starting to be complicated, and then you need to make sure you check in on the person. How are you doing? How's your work going? But how are you doing? Everything okay? Because if the first thing that's going to drop out in one of these remote working situations is, well, I wasn't at my desk as much as I should have that day because I had to take care of this and I had to take care of that and I had to go down to the courthouse and do this. And where do you draw the line between they'll make up the time later and they should have taken a day off to take care of that kind of stuff?
So it sounds like this virtual management thing has really been a journey for her that shifted her perspective. What do you think?
Yeah, she started in that non-trust position, yeah, right? And yeah. I think we would all naturally start there because well, is this really going to work, you know?
Yeah.
And she's moved to this place of acceptance. I thought it was curious that she uses the term work, you know? Yeah. Like, why do we need that term? You know, because you could be working and not working you know?
Yeah.
But anyway,
But life's full of work, right?
It is.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of work.
Yeah, and it goes back to that, the cat's away and the mice will play. And
right.
The theory X, you know, versus theory Y.
Tell me about that again, X.
Yeah, so theory X is kind of summarized by the cat's away, the mice will play.
Okay.
In order for people to be motivated to work and to get their work done and to be diligent, they have to have somebody watching over them, holding them accountable, checking over their shoulder.
An authoritarian boss.
It starts with a non-trusting assumption.
Okay, wow.
Right? And theory Y says, no, you know what? People were created to be productive.
Yeah.
People want to work.
Yeah.
They will engage and they're trustworthy.
Yeah.
And so what you need to do is to give them trust and interesting work, and away they'll go.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so it sounds like she made this journey from kind of being XY.
Yeah.
Which is a bad analogy. To being more fully Y.
Yeah.
Manager, saying, you know what? People want to work. They want to be productive. They want to be creative. And I'm going to give them trust.
But she's not fully trust because she's also accountability. She says, I decided to meet one-on-one with these people. I'm curious about their life. I want to check in with them.
Yeah.
She knows that they need more than just trust, don't they?
But the emphasis, yes. But the emphasis there was, I'm not checking in on their work primarily.
Yes.
I'm checking in to make sure we still have that personal connection.
Yeah.
And to show them my concern for their life and to be aware of it so that I know how to lead and manage and help them out.
I want
to
work for her. I just want to quit my job and work for Barbara. Like, isn't that awesome?
I just hope her employees had the same impression of her as we do.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe she talks a good game. So it's just a really interesting thing. And here's what we know though.
Yeah.
There is a whole series, a slew of studies on trust and how do you gain trust.
Right.
And this is the bottom line.
Okay. Give me the bottom line.
The bottom line is to for people to get trust from people, other people, they have to first give trust. And leaders, above all, need trust. Yeah. So to get it, you have to give it,
yeah.
Which is what she's doing.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff.
Pretty cool.
As I've said, I'm impressed with this lady.
All right. We got a winner here. All right. A couple more challenges I want to get to. Let's talk about this next one, which is about not seeing people.
Yeah. The challenges are mounting up, aren't
they? They are. You just wait. They're getting even bigger. What about the sense of teamwork? One of the things that being in the same space at the same time offers is sometimes you know if you're feeling like a team or not, kind of by the dynamic in the room, I've noticed. You still want to feel like a team when you're working remotely. And I'm wondering what impact the distance has on that feeling of being a team.
That's a difficult thing to achieve, but something that I've been told I'm pretty good at doing. I try to, again, deal with people as individuals a lot. And focus on the work, certainly, but I try to focus on solving problems for people and looking for the common problems that we have as a group and solving those so people feel connected. I try to partner people on initiatives who work in one office with people who work in another, so they have to figure out ways to work across the miles together. I also try to do group events over the miles. If these are successful or not successful, I've had, you know, holiday parties with the whole group on the line. And I tell each group, okay, you know, Boston location, somebody's in charge of getting food for your group and you reserve a room and everybody will be eating food and we'll be talking and we'll have video up and so we can see the people in the other rooms eating their, you know, piece of cake while we chat and we play a game together. And I try to achieve a little of what you might achieve in team building locally. It's hard. It's really hard. One thing, it's hard making time for it because of the time difference, the massive time difference I'm dealing with. Most of my actual employees are in North America, so I can at least deal with that the 3-hour time difference that we span. That's not as bad. But I think it really involves connecting people one to the other and forcing them to work as little teams without me necessarily having to shepherd all the team building and all the teamwork.
So that's interesting. She manages them by not managing, but by making them manage themselves as a team. Like, she puts them in a position where they're forced to work with each other without her.
Yeah, with accountability, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, sure.
And you know, she talked about two things. One is the kind of fun get-together, team-building kind of thing, which are cool,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And the other is giving them common work, common goals, throwing them together and saying, you've got to figure this out.
Yeah.
Go.
Right.
I noticed long ago in my work that I'm often called in to help teams build and strengthen themselves.
Uh-huh.
and the presenting request is, will you do a fun team building thing for us?
Everyone loves
these
that.
These folks aren't getting along, and I'm working like a team.
They're fighting each other.
Yeah, and my question is, well, when was the last time you required them to work together to accomplish a common goal and held them accountable to it?
Yeah.
Because
but never.
Never. Right. So the surefire way to get people to collaborate and work together and to focus together and to like each other is to force them to work together to something that they're interdependent and they're both held equally accountable mm-hmm. for the same result.
Yeah.
And this is what she's doing.
Yeah.
This is why I think she's brilliant.
Yeah.
She knows her stuff.
Yeah.
I want to give her a trophy. So as it turns out, right, is that a lot of the things that are making telework work and virtual working are just good leadership practices with a small twist.
Right. She's just adapting good, wise principles for work in this particular setting and right. making it work. So it's really more of an adjustment than a brand new way of
right.
working.
Right. And she's attended these.
And she's worked at it so long that she's gotten some lessons learned about
lots of wisdom.
So I asked her, what do you wish you had known when you'd started? Like what would have made this a lot easier if you were just starting yeah. this out now?
Yeah.
The culture in India would have been helpful to have known more earlier. I didn't get there. It took me a while to get there before my first visit to really get to know the people, and I'm not sure that could have been taught to me out of a textbook or a, you know, how to be an outsourcing manager's class. that would have been very helpful. I when I saw what the work conditions were like in India for even these high-end workers, I really had an appreciation for what they go through and their dedication and their loyalty. You know, I perceive that while I work with them on a daily basis, but you really see it when you see them come together and, you know, in the local area.
So she's saying, you know, I had to go there and yeah. see the people and see their work and see their life to understand.
Right.
And that's just one of those other lessons that I think that applies to everybody in management. You know, one of the things I hear from employees is they don't understand.
They don't get my conditions, my yeah. work, my life.
What this priority or this doing this will take. I don't, you know, or they don't get the culture out here because yeah. they're somewhere else.
Yeah.
Every separate place has a different culture.
Yeah.
Different things are acceptable. And so it's just crucial for leaders to get out and to experience what and where their people are.
There's so many things that you don't know that you don't know if you haven't done that.
Right. Yeah. And that's the key thing is to put yourself in situations where you can learn the new things, be open to that. And, yeah. And she's doing it. So I think that's great wisdom for her.
Yeah.
I think I wish I would have jumped into using video more often sooner. I don't use it that often still because it makes people really self-conscious. And it's a bit of an imprisoning kind of feel to be on a telephone where you have to make sure you don't pick your nose for a two-hour conference call. My boss uses video all the time, and we all feel very captive by that, honestly. So I think, though, there's a certain benefit to bringing video into play to personalize, to put a face behind the name, personalize things a bit. The continuing reminder that person that is annoying is still a person, and not just an annoying voice on the phone or an annoying person who wrote emails. So I think that would have been helpful.
I think it can be hard to understand her message there. It's kind of a mixed message.
Well, she's saying, I wish I'd used video earlier. She's not saying, I wish I used it all the time.
Right.
So it's early, but not often. And I think that's the distinction if I could tease that out.
Yeah.
Video makes you captive. I mean, I feel this with my family. I'm remote working right now with right. my family on a family project for my parents, a uh-huh. big anniversary coming up. And I had the question, do you want to Skype? Do you want to, you know, FaceTime? You want a video call? Or is phone call enough? And they all wanted this video feature, even though they're not sometimes as tech savvy. And so it's right. half of our time is spent getting everyone on the screen, right? But it does make you feel captive. I totally get that because I want the freedom on a call to walk around a bit. Sometimes I think better if I'm brainstorming, if I'm walking, as opposed to sitting. And I'm conscious of the fact that they're able to judge how I look at the moment while I'm, do I look attentive or not? Yeah. And so, you know, my brother was taking his phone around the house, going to make a piece of toast and petting the dog. And, you know, he was like having none of
this
captive.
With the video in his hand.
With the video in his hand. So we're all watching this take place.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, this is family. This is not work. You know, right. I think that could be inappropriate in some work context.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're planning a party. So, you know, but it brought up, like, how does that affect me? How does that, what did that communicate to me?
Yeah. You know, do you feel like he's paying attention? He's into this at all.
Right. Like, I'm wondering if he's really getting it. And at one point he said, I'm not sure I got that. Can you say again what I was supposed to do? If he had been paying attention, you know, so he cost us all time by doing yeah. that. And yet, what I liked about what he was doing is that he was not being a slave to the technology. So I think, you know, we want both, right?
Right. So we're all learning. We're all still on this learning curve yes. with how we use technology to integrate.
Right.
And it sounds like what you say, we all really need also to be up to speed on how to use technology, because it does waste our time if we're not, if
Huge.
We don't know what we're doing.
Huge. Right?
And so it's important to get the training and this and the equipment and all that good stuff.
Get your room set up. Get your office set up. If you're going to be a remote worker, like, you need to invest. Take some of the money that you saved by telecommuting and invest it in a good headset, a good microphone, a good camera, an office where you can close the door, like all that stuff.
Printer.
Yeah.
Your own printer and all that stuff. Yeah.
Get set up. If this is going to be a workplace, yeah. invest in that. And I think it'll pay big dividends. And it, what it communicates is that you care about the other people that you're working with. You care right. about their time. You care about how you come across, that the quality of that experience is something that's worth investing
right.
in.
Taking your work seriously.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, what you would expect your employer to set you up with.
Yes.
You need to set up with.
You need to be your own employer.
You have a place to go to.
Yep. Set yourself up.
Yeah. That's good advice. That's yeah. good advice. So Barbara's sharing some good wisdom with us here. I'm wondering if she has still more to share.
Well, there's one more question I asked her about what she would learn, what wisdom she would give. And she deals with personality a little bit. I thought we would just tease that out a little bit. I'm curious about what you, because you're kind of the personality guy.
I like personality.
In our family. So
yeah.
Tell me what you think of this.
I read articles all the time that tell you that you should be showered and dressed and sitting fully in business clothes that you would wear to the office when you're working at home. I don't know anyone who does that. In fact, I'm usually in gym clothes because I'm somewhere going to squeeze a workout in between all these back-to-back telephone calls that I do. But your personality type is a big factor here. If you know yourself to be easily distracted by the things in your house, it's dangerous to make yourself a remote worker. I find, as a woman, I'm a multitasker by nature, and I will try to make good use of the time while I'm working at home. So I will, between meetings, go put a load of laundry in the washer, and I might be folding towels while I'm listening to a conference call that I'm not leading, that's informational, where my presence on a camera is not required. That's all okay. But if I get so distracted with housework that I am not getting my work done, then it's time to go back to the office and get my work done. Either go in that room and shut the door, or get dressed and go to the real office and get it done.
Again, she's using this term work, which I think is just so funny to me. But anyway.
It's work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this goes back to know thyself.
Right.
Right. And teleworking isn't for everybody, and it's not certainly not for everybody all the time.
What personality types are at risk for bombing out? I mean, she says if you're easily distracted, that's not a personality type, is it?
Well, there's different elements of personality, right?
Yeah.
Not everything's captured in personality instruments. But
right.
So what she's talking about partly here are people who, like my wife, who are highly conscientious.
Yeah.
You let them work from anywhere.
Yeah.
You put them on a cruise ship and they're going to work.
Yeah, right.
Right. And it's not going to be an issue. I think people who are a little bit ADD and a little bit impulsive
it
might have a harder time.
Can you test
impulse
for that?
Control? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, ADD is not quite personality,
no.
but it's part. It's one step away.
Yeah.
But it's part of who you are. And so, but here's the thing. they're ADD in the office just as much as they are ADD at home.
Maybe it's better to have them at home because they're not distracting
other
people.
Fewer distractions.
I don't know. Yeah.
And there's fewer things to interrupt them.
They can control the environment and tailor it to themselves, maybe. I don't know.
But I think this goes back to really, maybe it's not about whether you should telework. Maybe it goes back to what accommodations you make.
Yeah.
Right. So we talked with, I think it was April, mm-hmm. and she said, you know, I have to remember to like get away from the computer because my, you know, my eyes are bleeding. Well, that was my turn. No, she actually said that my eyes are bleeding and I have to remind myself to get up and walk.
Yeah.
And
leave the house.
Leave the house. Yeah. Right. So she has that to deal with.
Yeah.
Others might have distractions to deal with and reminders and cues that tell them what to, you know, to remind them to stay on track or to take breaks or whatever. So I think it's know thyself and make adjustments, maybe is the answer to this.
And maybe share what you know about yourself with the people you're working with so that those adjustments can be a part of your team conversation.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And your boss, naturally, right? That's
right.
Like people helping you to stay on track and be accountable and doing things that are healthy for you. That's awesome.
One more quote I've got for you, okay?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I asked her, what's the ideal working situation? Well, if she could create it herself without limitations, like what is her dream situation as it relates to remote working and working in the office and teamwork?
Yeah. That's so she's seen this wave of virtual working come in and has perspective on what it was like before and now. So now she wants to tell us the ideal.
All right, here she is.
Honestly, my ideal work world would still have an office with everybody who did the same job in the one place together. I fantasize about those olden days sometimes. Because the workplace relationships that were formed in that kind of a setting are so intense and so valuable and so lasting. And that would be a world then, in my own mind, where no one had to commute more than 15 or 20 minutes to get to that workplace, and that you would have the skill sets you needed within that 20-minute circle to do the work. And so it's a fantasy. It's a 21st century fantasy to want that world. So if I could design a 21st century workplace, it would probably look more like the life that I live for myself, which is I have the ability to work flexibly from anywhere that I pretty much want to, and I'm responsible enough to do my job, and I have the ability to hire really great people who I know I can trust to do the job from wherever they are. And the only thing I would add to the mix is the ability to bring that team together twice a year face-to-face for a week, where we could party together a little bit and do some workshoppy things together a little bit and bond a bit more. But we don't get that. When the economy turns down, you just don't get the cash for that. So that would probably be the way I'd do it.
So Ken, where's the wisdom in that for you? What struck out to you as the wise thing she said?
Well, she puts a high value on being together at the same place at the same time. And I think she would fight for that, even though it's expensive.
Yeah.
Fight for that because she sees the value playing out as a manager of knowing the people that well.
Right.
It's the intangible. You know, she says in another place that we didn't include that the only reason you can get people together is if there's some kind of training. You know, that's the only reason the boss is going to actually pay for it, because the boss doesn't see the value in bringing together people for a party for the relational aspect. Because what's the effect on the bottom line? They say, well, that's negative. What she says is, no, that's positive.
Yeah.
She's going to work better, more efficiently, more effectively with those people. For her, it's worth it without the training. But the compromise is that you do training. You heard that in part of her answer. We come together twice a year. We do some workshoppy things, right? And that's the part where, okay, this seems justifiable to the numbers people.
Yeah, yeah. And I love all that, and I think that that's great stuff. For me, the thing is, and I want to leave this with our audience, is her mature perspective on change. Sure, I long for what we had. There was good stuff there. But there's a new reality, right? And so what we need to do is accept this new reality and work it as best we can and embrace the benefits of it. And though I long for other things at times, to embrace what's come and to accept it and to make the most of it as best we can. And I think that is something, that attitude, I think, is what we really need moving forward in this world, because there's nothing but turmoil and change and disruption ahead of us on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thanks for delving into this topic. I feel like you and Barbara have really given us a lot of great wisdom for dealing with not only remote workers and managing them, but managing ourselves and coming up with the proper perspective for change.
It's been fun to listen to and fun to participate in.
So thanks for listening to our podcast, WorkWise. If you want more information about us, you can go to creativitylabs.us and you can reach Michael at credoconsulting.us. If you're interested in getting some help with your marketing and communications, head on over to accentinteractive.com and you'll see how we can help you out over there. Thanks again for listening. I'm Ken Kennard.